Welcome to Hype, another special for The 100. This is our fourth The 100 special, and as Kristen just pointed out, this is for episode 12 of season 3, so we're right on schedule with one special every 3 episodes, so well done us. That was some brilliant planning that we totally planned on purpose, right?
Oh, yeah.
my name is Selena, and I am joined by my fellow Hype podcast host, Kristen. We both write for Hypeable.com, where I write The 100 recaps, and Kristen writes The 100, what do we call those?
Like teasers, features.
Teaser posts.
I'm around.
Yeah. Basically, we cover The 100 for Hypeable.
Yeah.
It's the point of it all. And we are bringing you some The 100 specials every once in a while, just mainly because we don't have a full The 100 podcast on Hypeable, but we're both huge fans, and there's so much to talk about that we sort of try to commandeer Hype every once in a while and make an episode all about The 100. And I know some of you guys have been requesting this one for a while, so we hope that you enjoy our discussion. And of course, we will primarily be talking about episode 12, which was Demons, but we'll also go back to last week's episode a little bit because we both enjoyed it so much and we just basically want to gush about it for a bit. So so we'll start with that, and then we'll go into talking about the episode called Demons. Before we get into the discussion, though, just as always, we want to remind you of our contact information. If you want to share with us your thoughts on The 100 Season 3, or if you want to talk to us about any of the other recent news that we usually discuss on Hype Podcast, you can find us on Twitter at HypeableHype. You can email us, hype@hypeable.com, and you can, of course, find us on hypeable.com, which is HYPABLE. There'll be a little post for this particular podcast episode where you can leave us your feedback. So let's just dive right into discussing last week's episode. What was it named? This is embarrassing. What was it called?
I can tell you.
How quickly we forget. Oh, it was the Raven.
Nevermore.
Nevermore.
Yep, it was the Raven.
The Raven one.
Yep. Yeah.
Very fitting because, of course, Raven was pretty much, like, as much as this show ever does centric episodes, I feel like this was very much a Raven-centric episode, even though it wasn't really her for most of it. But she was at the center of the action, let's say, of course, in this episode. All of the delinquents were finally back together after 84 years and were basically uniting despite their differences to save Raven from Allie, who had, of course, infected her and was controlling her. And I know I loved it. What did you think about it, Kristen?
I definitely liked this episode. I mean, there's been a lot of chatter in the first half of the season that Raven had kind of gotten sidelined, and knowing that the season was done, pretty much finished before it ever started airing, like they were done shooting it, you know, just about the time it started, and like we went through this whole Raven dry spell and now she was like front and center, she's the linchpin that's holding everything together. Like, it's beautiful that without even hearing feedback, like, you can tell that this is what they were building toward. Like, we went through this Raven drought, but now it's all Raven riches. Like, we're just, you know, being showered with all of this amazing story for her. And, yeah, that episode was just chock full of amazing stuff from Raven.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's it. And like I said, it wasn't even really Raven, but I mean, it was, because Allie was drawing on a lot of her knowledge of the other characters, as well as, of course, like all the knowledge that Allie has from everyone who's uploaded into the City of Light. But just showing, first of all, how Raven is to all of these people, but also just showing how much they all need her. You know, like I think I said in my review that she is the one who grounds them all, no pun intended. Like, she is one of the best ones of them, you know, who's left. Like, I know everyone's done some horrible stuff, but she is the one who's always sort of there for all her friends. She's always there for them, and she's been dealing with so much herself, but she's always sort of made time for everyone else. And now they're the ones who have to, like, there's never any thought of, well, why don't we just kill her and get rid of Allie? Like, no, of course not. That doesn't even occur to them because she's Raven. And I love seeing them sort of unite around her because, of course, all of these people are close. But Raven isn't just special to the fandom. She's special to all of these characters. And I just love getting to see that on screen.
Yeah, like, she hasn't had it easy, like none of them have, but, you know, she lost Finn, who was arguably, like, the love of her life, or her first love, at least, and she was, you know, she's been horribly injured, that it's now something she has to learn to deal with and live with, like, she's fairly, you know, I don't know if she's actually paralyzed or if it's just really painful on that leg, but you know what I mean, like, she has had it just as rough as everyone else, but yet her focus is always on, you know, everybody, like, she's the one who's trying to keep everybody together. She knows that they can't run off and do everything separately because they will not survive, like, she's always the one trying to keep everybody together. So, yeah, I'm very, very, very glad to have Raven, like, back in the thick of things.
Me too. And, of course, like, what you said, it brought up another interesting point as well, which is that, I mean, sometimes, and I know, of course, we're talking about the 100, which is a contentious thing to be talking about right now, but sometimes you do need to let storylines play out before you sort of make a lot of, like, judgments or assumptions about where the story's going to go, because, as you said, like, Raven, people are complaining that Raven has been so sidelined, but really, as you said, like, this is what it's been leading to. She has been sidelined because she was the person that was going to bring all the delinquents together, and she has been suffering a lot because it was all going to culminate in this, you know, in her letting go of her pain and then realizing that she needed her pain to be herself. And, you know, and I thought that was beautiful. And, of course, like, this is actually a show where we're supposed to talk about in the next episode, so we can't spend too much on it. But, but no, really, just after that long drought of having the delinquents be separate, finally getting to see them come back together, if only for a bit, was such a satisfying payoff. And I don't think we would have felt like that if they had been together more. And of course, like I said in my recap as well, like, you can argue that maybe they were separated too long.
Yeah.
But I mean, really, you know, we're just over halfway through the season, and they haven't really been separated. Like, they've met up and stuff. And I feel like, I just feel like them coming together now at this point under these circumstances was so perfect. And it suddenly made a lot of stuff that happened early on in the season make a lot more sense, I think, storyline-wise.
Yeah, like, I mean, the first two seasons, they were all together all the time because they needed to be in one place to survive. And yes, some people made little, you know, side adventures. Like, I feel like Clark spent half of her time out in the woods. But,
yeah.
But, you know, they had to come back together very often for survival. Now that they've got a larger, you know, settlement, it was almost necessary for them to take their roles from their first camp and spread out. So it made sense that they weren't together all the time. And now, but it felt wrong because we're so used to seeing them together. So now that they're being forced to kind of, you know, group up again and go at this major problem, it feels like coming home to the dropship because it's been so long since the, you know, the main core group have been fighting side by side and working toward the same goal. And now they've all got the same goal. Now they all know what they have to do.
And that's what we're getting to. Like, that's the big payoff of this. It's not so much just seeing them work together now, but it's the fact that they've all been separated. Like, they started off being, you know, dumped on the ground together, relying on each other for survival, not always agreeing on everything. That's, you know, not giving them too much credit. But sticking together, and the whole first season sort of was about, one of the things that was about was for Bellamy and Clark to learn to work together and to learn to use their differences as a positive thing, you know, to learn to be leaders who complemented each other. And then that was just like one aspect of it, and Octavia gaining her independence and Jasper gaining some agency and all of those different things. And then what has happened up until this point is that they've been pulled apart, you know, like, whether it's like personal stuff like Monty and Jasper's strife, or if it's Clark joining the Grounders and leaving them, or if it's Octavia with, like all of those things have made them come to a point when they come together in episode 11 and they are so fractured and they're all of their relationships are so broken, and it's only Raven that holds them together. Like, these people at the start of this episode were ready to leave each other behind and never see each other again. You know, Octavia even said it, you know, she's not a part of the 100 anymore. She's ready to move on. By the end of the episode, they're back together and they've chosen that, you know, like, this isn't just them coming back together. This is them choosing to be, like, for lack of a better word, like a clan, you know, like, forget the 13th clan. We've got the 100 clan right here. And that's that they've chosen to be each other's family.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of very clearly done by Monty when he chose to shoot his mother to save Octavia.
Yeah.
You know, that was like as obvious as you can get that this is the message they're sending, you know? And so I feel, and I also feel like even though they do split up in the next episode, that it's still, they're still working towards the same goal. Like, they're still on the same page and they're still united in a way that they weren't before that episode. And I just love that. I think that's such a great story development.
Definitely. I mean, it's so tough to see all the characters separated the way they have been. And to now that they're back together, like, it just feels right. So yeah, they needed to be separated. They needed to be apart to remember exactly how well they worked together. So now hopefully you'll see Jasper start to mend and Monty to find some solace, you know, in the after events of him shooting his mother. And, you know, like, there's a lot of things that need to be repaired now, and hopefully them having to work together toward this, you know, same goal of saving themselves and basically all normal humans. Is like, you know, now that they've got this goal, like, they hopefully will be able to work together and continue to see, you know, the same way and go back to that dynamic that we loved so much before.
I hope so. And not even go back, but make it even better.
Right, yeah, you know? Yeah. Progress, push it forward, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Right. And that's sort of, and that's where we leave the gang sort of on a very hopeful note at the end of episode 11, and we move into to Demons, which is, we're going to be discussing that in a bit more depth, because of course it aired just a couple of days ago. And in this episode, we're sort of taking it a little bit sort of step by step. And I want to start by talking about the opening scene, not just because it's the first scene of the episode, but because it was one of my favorite scenes of the episode. And it's basically Harper, Miller, and Brian, these three non-main characters, just chilling in the cave and telling each other's ghost stories and generally, like, just developing this cute little my new OT3 between them, which I just thought was amazing.
I mean, first of all, I love Miller. The fact that mm-hmm. he's actually gotten some story this year and is becoming like an actual fully fledged character is one of the highlights of season three for me so far. Like, I really, really like that we're getting to actually know him, since we know his father was, you know, yeah. like, we met his father and we haven't met all of the parents and, you know, like, all of that. So it's nice to finally get some moments for him. And this scene is just so great. Like, you get this idea that he's not just Mr. all about business, because he's kind of been that way. Like, he's got these ghost stories in him, and it's just so cute. I loved the opening. And I know Karen really liked it, too. She kept talking about how it gave, like, that horror movie feel, and this episode was kind of chock full of that, but the opening just really set the tone for it, and it was so different, yeah. but really, really cool.
Right. Like, I really love the fact that they're as well so confident in their supporting cast that they'll open an episode with the three of them and expect us to immediately be like, oh, so cute, like,
mm-hmm.
we like all of these people kind of thing, you know, and they're using Harper and Miller to help establish Brian, who's, of course, we don't know him very well yet, but we know Miller and Harper, even though they're auxiliary characters, we know them so well and they're so integral to our understanding of what the show is, that it's enough to pull us in and to immediately make us care about them,
mm-hmm.
And to make us legitimately worried about them. Because, of course, like, you can't expect... this is so dumb. Like I had this question in the doc as well. Like, why would you tell scary ghost stories and make jokes about people being, like, eviscerated when you live in a world where those things can definitely and probably will happen to you? You know?
I mean, yeah, probably not the smartest thing in the world. Like, where if you're sitting in a cave... with your fire for light, and it's not like you're camping for fun out in the woods. Like, there's a lot of things that can go wrong. Yeah, it doesn't necessarily seem like something you do for entertainment and enjoyment, but maybe Miller's just that twisted. Like, he's just that maybe crazy that this is still fun for him.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought that that Harper was gonna die this week. And I thought it was going to be, like, because we saw her scream in the promo, and I thought that was going to be it. And then when Miller went out and disappeared, and then Brian followed, I was like, are they killing all three of them? Like, what is happening?
I got very nervous. Like, when the first one left, I think it was Miller, and then Brian left, and I'm like... they didn't just kill both of them, did they? Like,
I know, I
you've
got
to be kidding me. Like, no. And then Harper screams, and I'm like, they did not, they are not killing three characters in one episode. No, there's no way. Like, and my brain was like already finding a way out. Like, nope, there's no way. Something else is going on. It's okay.
And I'm glad you thought that, because I sat through the opening credits and the commercials going like, oh my god, they're going to come back to the cave and their bodies are going to be like on display.
God.
I think I would fit into this world. My mind is very twisted, apparently, but that's what I imagined would happen. So I'm very
glad
right
there with
didn't.
Miller telling ghost stories around the fire.
Yeah, yeah. I thought it was a Reaper, like, or a Reaver, whatever they call them here, like, because... I don't know, for some reason that's what it looked like in the promo. So, just so glad that they are all still alive, at least, if nothing else. So yeah, the gang sort of Miller and Brian and Harper are gone, but the gang don't know this because they are back in Arcadia and they assume that that's where they've gone. But they don't find them there, and they begin to sort of worry, but still decide to split up, because that is, of course, the best way to make sure that everyone dies. So, and they have these cute little interactions, sort of two or three or whatever, like little side groups. Jasper and Octavia, sort of an interesting constellation, because we had, of course, Octavia and Monty last week, and that friendship between the three of them is something they established in season one, and they keep coming back to it, and I really like that. So I like seeing the two of them one-on-one, you know?
Yeah, I always was a huge fan of the Jasper-Octavia thing, because he started off as kind of that creepy little teenage boy who, like, just really liked her.
Yeah,
but
he was, like, obsessed with her. Yeah,
yeah, but he wouldn't really say anything, and then Lincoln showed up, and, you know... their friendship, while it was still there, it kind of dwindled because they were separated for so long, you know, because he was in Mount Weather and all that. So I do love seeing Jasper and Octavia together. Monty as well with them, but especially Jasper and Octavia, because I feel like there's just a bond there that Jasper doesn't seem to necessarily build with everyone. He's kind of standoffish. I mean, he always has been a little with Clark, I think, but now even more so. And with Octavia, he kind of lets the veil drop a lot easier than he does with other characters. So I was really excited to see them get some scenes together, especially now that she's basically going through what he was going through the first half of the season. And, like, he's trying to, like, give her what he wishes people would have said to him. You can kind of see that. Like, he's saying it's okay to mourn him. Like, it's okay. You loved him. Like, that's what... you can tell that's what Jasper wishes everyone was telling him, instead of the, you need to move on, you didn't know her that long. You know, like, that, you can tell that that's all he's trying to do, is give her what he didn't have. And it's... yeah. And then she goes and tells him the total opposite of what he would have reacted. Like... you know, warrior doesn't mourn the dead until after the battle is won. Like,
which craziness. Is such a good line, and such an Octavia line. But, you know, like, what you just said, it almost, like, gave me chills. That was amazing, because I think you're absolutely right. Like, that's the thing with Jasper, is that it's funny sometimes how, like, fiction mirrors reality, because in the show they're all like, oh, you know, we face so much worse, oh, just get over it already. And in reality too, fans are like, oh, Jasper, like, why is he so hung up on this girl? Like, all the other characters have been through so much worse. Oh my god, man pain. And the, like, I don't know if you saw this, it was amazing. Devin Bostick on Twitter sent this tweet out, which was basically like, basically to shut everyone up and being like, you know what? He has PTSD. This is a real thing. Stop with your man pain. It's degrading, please. And it's like, yeah, that's like, thank you for saying that, because it's so true. And it's such a common myth also, because he's a guy. So when he cries and breaks down and when he can't handle it, it's like that whole myth of masculinity that the 100 sort of very meticulously breaks down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I've always said that the 100 is as much of a show for men as for women, because they aren't like, yay, girl power on expense of like the male characters. They're like, men and women are equal creatures in this world, so let's look at, like, let's let them all be real. And I love that, and I think that what they've done with Jasper this season has just been so real and relatable and wonderful. And to see him begin to come out on the other side of that is also just very, very, very nice, you mm-hmm. know, and see him be able to say this to Octavia, and like you said so well, that's what someone should have said to him, because it would have been the right thing to say, you know?
Yeah, like, I'm sure someone said it to him at some point. Like, I'm sure when
Abby did.
Yeah, like, I'm sure when it first happened, and, you know, that's all, people feel bad because, yeah, it did happen, and everybody knows why Clark did what she did, but it doesn't help him. And so, you know, like, you can see him just trying to be exactly what he thinks she needs, and Octavia is not him, like, in any way, shape, or form. So it's not what she needs here. She needs someone to be like, you know, let's keep it going. Let's, you know, we'll mourn him when everything's done. And it just,
She needs Indra, basically.
Pretty much, yeah.
But yeah, they do find the map that Lincoln so helpfully left behind in the sketchbook that'll lead them to Luna. I don't really know how it's going to be much help. It didn't look like a very detailed map, but, you know, I'm sure that they're going to be able to find the ocean. So,
and that little take notebook, it from there. Just
yeah,
the like she found the notebook, and I just kind of like had a moment. Because that's, you know, like, I would say in the world of the Grounders, like, there's probably not a whole lot that they can leave behind that really you can remember. They don't have pictures. They don't have, you know, all of these, like, writings and all of that sort of stuff. But he has this notebook that he's been carrying since the day he saw her. And it has all kinds of drawings of things that they've done and where they've been. And so she has a record after this is all done, and she doesn't need the map anymore. Like, she still has a piece of Lincoln with her. And that, I think, is just really, really beautiful. And it works out really well that it's been something we've seen since the beginning. Like, it, you have that connection to him, too, through that book. Mm-hmm. So it's just really cool.
Yeah. Do you think she's going to be, like, okay, because I know that by the end, like, is she gonna be okay? But like, because by the end of it, I know that she sort of, I mean, she's dealing with it the best she can, and she did have that breakdown moment that was so beautiful, except everyone was just like staring at her, which was like a little awkward. But like, the hope is, of course, that she's gonna be able to move on and become the strong warrior that we know she is. But I do worry, because it's hitting her obviously really, really hard, and Octavia is not one to let go of this kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah, I'm really excited and hoping that when Octavia meets Luna, that Luna will maybe like help her move past all of this. Like, I don't, as far as I know, we're not supposed to meet Luna this year. I don't know if did they cast her?
Well, it might be a secret, or we might already have met her.
True. I mean, that's always a possibility. But, like, I'm, you know, Luna, Lincoln always talked about Luna as this friend of his, you know, from a distant shore. Now we know how she ended up where she is. So Luna did know Lincoln. And if he trusted her enough to take Octavia to her, last season, then I would say that Luna probably knows Lincoln as good or if not better than Octavia does. So I'm hoping that someone who truly knew Lincoln might help Octavia to mourn him and move past it. Like, she needs someone who understood Lincoln as well as she does. And I don't necessarily know if any of our Sky crew can say that. Like, they knew parts of him, but I don't think they necessarily knew him.
Well, I mean, Indra knew him, you know?
Yeah,
but different. Indra doesn't really talk
had her
about
own
her feelings.
And she had her own issues with Lincoln.
That's true, yeah. I guess so. I guess you're right. Having someone who knew like Lincoln really well, like she might even be his sister or something. Like we don't really know, do we? So
no. Yeah.
Or maybe what's his face? Nico, is he still alive?
I don't know. But
or
if
is
she
in the City of Light now? Like I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what's going on, guys.
I don't either. But if if Luna ends up being Lincoln's little sister. Like, little sister power.
Oh my god, I just almost spit out my water.
Like, Octavia doesn't know any sisters.
She's so perfect.
Literally has friends and they are all only children. So, like, oh, that would be so great.
Oh my god, I hope that's true.
Now I'm just gonna hope for that endlessly.
Yes. Me too. I mean, okay, it would be weird that Lincoln never told her, but then you never know. Like, some things just don't come up in conversation, so I'm going for that theory. That's amazing.
Yeah, like, and who knows? Grounder culture, siblings might not be such a big thing. Like, you know,
true.
Maybe it's just not big a deal when you're all a part of the same tribe and all that. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? Hopefully we'll find out. But yeah, we'll come back to Octavia and Jasper a little bit later on, but the other team consisting of Raven, Sinclair, Monty, and Clark. I don't know, where was Bellamy? Was he in the scene or am I?
He was kind of like tagging along behind Clark the whole time. Like he kind of was bringing up the rear, kind of making sure that nothing snuck up behind them and, you know, even though it did anyway.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. But yeah, so I was just mainly paying attention to Sinclair. I'm sorry.
Right. Yeah, no, it's okay.
Oh, we'll get there. So yeah, and they're all sort of trying to figure out how this AI works because of course they figure out that it opens without a host. I don't know what they expected it would like talk to them. Like a little mouth would appear and be like, I'm Allie too, hello. Like, I don't know. But they thought they could open it without a host. And so they were like trying to think of phrases Lexa might have used, which was sort of, it's always emotional when they bring up Lexa on the show, even when it's something like this. But they don't work it out. And finally they figure out that it's a Latin phrase and it's Sinclair who figures it out, of course, because Sinclair was the most awesome person to ever awesome. And it is Ascende Superius. And I don't know what kind of wand movement goes with that, but I'm sure that it's something. I have to ask, Kristen, was this not like 100% Harry Potter-ish?
I mean, it definitely gave you the Harry Potter spell tingly feeling, like, you know, it's...
I mean, Ascende Superior, it might as well have been Ascende Bombarda or something, like...
Yeah, I mean, truly.
Superius Maxima, like, I don't know, but, like...
Superius Maxima. Ascende, it's, yeah.
No. Yeah, Ascende, like, it's basically a spell, but it's just, and also it's such a snitch moment. Like I open at the close, you know, like trying all kinds of different phrases
so
that Dumbledore
true.
Might have known, you know, like, and Lexa was basically Dumbledore. So it works out.
It really does.
And sort of along the same lines, I have to ask, I brought this up in my recap as well. Like, is the AI not like 100% a Horcrux? Like,
I
mean, that not basically what it is?
Well, I guess maybe kind of, sort of, but it also represents the only hope they have. Like, the second AI is the only hope they have to destroy the actual Horcrux, which is Allie.
that's true. That is like a good Horcrux.
Right. Like, it's like, instead of taking parts of the soul, it's like it collects souls for those departed. So it's like the anti-Horcrux.
That's
you know,
good.
Like, you don't have to kill in order for this to be, for it to, I don't know, become a part of you or for you to become a part of it. But, you know, it collects the souls. And so everybody is stored within this thing.
That's true. That's a good point. That's sort of what makes it different. I was just thinking about the way that, like, like Lexa had it in her, and it sort of amplified some of her traits. Like, it was like Harry having a piece of Voldemort's soul in his brain, because it didn't change him, but it did amplify his anger, and mm-hmm. it was there giving him dreams and stuff, like Alexa had dreams,
yeah,
and sort of pushing him in a certain direction. I had definite Horcrux vibes, and I put it in my review as well, like as side-by-side comparison of the AI and the Slytherin's locket, because they look exactly the same. And yeah. It's, like, very funny. And I was just thinking about all the writers, like, the 100 writers tweeting about Hogwarts sortings, and I'm like, yeah.
There was definitely some Horcrux talk in the writer's room during this
week. I bet there was, absolutely. And it is, you know, it is, like, also a little piece of Lex's soul, even though it's not really, because, like... Yeah, it is, because it collected, like you said, it collected some of Lexa that's in there now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
some of her wisdom, some of her strength, exactly. It's all, yeah, it keeps a part of them so that it can be passed on, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so they sort of work that out, and now that it's open, they, like, don't really know where to go from here, but at least, like, they've come that far, and it'll obviously come into play later on. So, but Clark and Monty sort of realize that Octavia and Jasper have been taken and go chasing after them.
Yeah, because I remember thinking, because Monty says it. He says, like, don't go chasing after the creepy music, Clark. Like, it's like he's watched horror movies. And I'm like, go, Monty! Like, somebody said it. Like, I was so proud. Yeah, no.
And then she does. And he's like, or chase after the creepy music.
And then it's just sitting in the hallway, and you're like, let's, you know, walk straight towards it, like the trap that it is. Let's just fall right in.
And, like, pick it up and look at it for a long time. Like, okay, bad guy, come and get me. Like, that was bad. But I think I read something about Christopher Larkin sort of it being a conscious thing that Monty wouldn't get out his gun. Because, like, after he killed his mom, like, he's going to be very reluctant to get his gun out again, which I think was a very neat little thing, nod to that.
It definitely in his character, too. Like, very well fits who he is.
Yeah. And props to Tree Adams, by the way, who I interviewed for Hypeable, the composer for season 3, who did such a good job with the creepy music in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely some great scares there. Emerson smokes, you know, puts one of those season 1 finale smoke bomb things and takes Monty, but Clark manages to escape and sees that it's Emerson. And Clark as well, like, she goes out, like, she escapes outside to Bellamy, but... And I don't know if this happened before or after. I'm sorry. I'm like mixing up the timeline. But at least the other thing that happens that Emerson does is that he goes into the hangar bay where Raven and Sinclair have locked themselves in, thinking that they'll be safe, except Emerson is already in there with them. And then, Kristen, what happens?
Okay. I have to tell you, when this first happened, I didn't appropriately react to it because of the stupid pink smoke stuff. I thought maybe she had, like, envisioned this happening, because it was so like anticlimactic, like the way it actually happened and, like, the way he was stabbed and all of that. The moment they had after that was totally, like, a really beautiful moment for the two of them, but I thought that she was, like, seeing this happen and that it wasn't actually happening. So I didn't, like, appropriately react to the fact that Sinclair was dying. And then he dies, and Raven is dragged off. And then Clark comes in, and he's still there. And I was like, no. I was like, no, Sinclair can't actually be dead. And then I, like, appropriately mourned the character. Like, at first I thought it was something to do with the smoke, because it just seemed so extreme and it happened so fast that I didn't quite grasp it. But, you know, once Clark walks in and finds him, like, it's totally real. And you realize that, you know, there's nothing else going on. He actually just died. Mm. So... Yeah, no, I will miss Sinclair. I was always a little worried for him because we never got another name. He was just Sinclair. Mm. Like, I don't think we ever... I don't even know if that's his first name or his last name, but, you know, like, every other character, I feel like we know their whole name. Like, we've it's one of those things. And like poor Monroe, we never really knew her other name. We probably heard
it
once.
True. Now give us Harper's last name or first
I know.
Name.
Like, I don't know what Harper's other name is, but I want to know it now.
Right. Didn't we decide it's Harper and that's it?
And that's
so
fine.
We just saved her. She can't die now. Right. She has two names.
That's totally fine. Harper works for me. So yeah, I was always a little worried for him, but I hoped that, you know, it was just a part of his character. So I am sad to see Harper Sinclair go, because I really, him and Raven, man, like, I really love their relationship and, like, their how they managed to help each other and make each other better. And it was just, yeah, really, really beautiful.
I have so many feelings about this. Like, first of all, yeah, like you said, like, Raven, I feel like they could have let her have this. You know, like, I don't see why this had to happen. I feel like such a hypocrite, because like Lexa and Lincoln's deaths were obviously so much bigger and so much people are so much more angry about them, and I understand why, but just in terms of the story, I was like, well, you know, Lexa's death propels this new storyline, and Lincoln's death sort of propels Octavia's storyline. But Sinclair, I mean, really, you know, like, Raven has lost so much. Mm-hmm. And there's absolutely no reason why Sinclair couldn't. I mean, I guess the thing is that Sinclair was like the only adult that they had left on their side, you know? And obviously we don't know what's going to happen to Cain and Abby.
Yeah.
But I assume that not all the adults are going to die. So I was like, why can't Sinclair just stick around and be the Chancellor in season 4? You know, like, first of all, that's a perfectly logical thing for him to do. And, but also just in terms of Raven, they just managed to set this great father-daughter relationship up between them and then kill him off. And it's sad that you, in retrospect, you see it coming, because of course Raven is not allowed to have nice things, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like maybe she should have been able to have him. Mm-hmm. But, and it's also just a case of, like, and I said this in my review too, like, I just feel like one of the things that brings the 100 to life is its secondary cast. Like we were saying, you know, Harper and Miller and Brian.
And Jackson.
Like, if they'd killed...
Yeah.
And Jackson, right? Like, but if they'd killed those people off, like, when it seemed obvious, like, back in season 1 or in season 2, like, Harper was being drilled with that thing, like, that easily could have killed her, you know? But then we wouldn't have had these great scenes with her in season 3. So by sort of establishing Sinclair and bringing him back, all the way back from season 1, letting him survive to Earth, letting him tag along with the kids and actually be an ally to them, I just feel like now that he's dead, all of that was sort of not for nothing, because story is never for nothing, but I just feel like it would have been more interesting to keep him alive in this case and have him flesh out the world, you know?
I do kind of agree with you, especially because we've got this group, this core group that has been our group for so long, and it was, you know, them plus Lincoln or them plus Abby or them plus, you know, insert random adult here. It would have been nice to see Sinclair like become a true part of the group, because I don't necessarily know if Sinclair really ever felt like one of the adults. Like, he always
he was a child at heart, guys.
Well, no, but he kind of like fit in with Raven and Wick and all of them. Like, mm-hmm. he kind of fit in with them better than I thought he fit in with Abby and Cain and Jaha being ridiculous. So I was excited to see him be with this group and for them to go off and find Luna and be like a representative of the actual Sky Crew who were not on Earth, and, you know, just kind of see him become a part. So I am sad to see him go. It would have been nice to see how his role would evolve in this group and how it would change, you know, their makeup and how they deal with each other. Like, he could have done a lot for him. So I am quite sad to see him go as well.
And at the same time, like, it is that thing of, like, we just said how the gang, like, the delinquents are quickly learning that the only people they can truly rely on is each other. Mm-hmm. So by having one of the adults there, like, I understand the logic behind let's get rid of him and let's have it be just the kids now. Like, now they're all they've got. But I just feel like in the larger scheme of things, it's... And I mean, if anyone had to die, I hate to say this, but, like, better be Sinclair than be, like, Miller or someone who is an established part of the group and who is one of the original delinquents, because it is all about the delinquents in the end. It's not about the adults.
Right.
I
couldn't understand why Emerson killed him and saved everyone else.
Well, I think it was just a mistake. Either he knew, like, Clark and him wasn't very close, so he didn't need him, or else it was just because he fought back.
That's the only thing I could come up with, is, like, he's the only one to actually, like, get a hit in. Like, he actually got a chance to defend himself, and so maybe that's why. But it was like, he had saved everyone else, and poor Sinclair is the only casualty, and Emerson's like...
Right.
Such a punk. Anyway, yeah. So that was.
I don't know. I mean, again, it's fine, but it's just I always feel like, and this is not just for the 100, but just in every show, like death is easy. You know, death is the easy choice to make when you're in a situation where you're like, okay, what am I going to do with this character? I'll kill him and have people be sad about it. Like, okay, that's great, but what else could you do? And sometimes you kill people off because it's a dangerous world and you want to raise the stakes and stuff. But I do feel like, and again, I'm trying to be fair. I'm trying not to be like, oh, yay, the 100, rah, because I am like that, like 90% of the time. But so just sometimes it actually lowers the stakes, because the more people die, the less invested you become in them.
Yeah.
So the more I'm seeing these side characters die, the more I'm like, yeah, okay, but if it's just about the main characters, why are they here, the other people, you know, if they're just going to die eventually anyway?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that feeling just is a shame, because The 100 generally does such a good job of making me feel like everyone matters, and like everyone we see in the background, like Miller, like Harper, like these people can eventually rise up and sort of become major players, you know?
Yeah. Exactly. So. Yeah. And they did a good job of that, especially in first season, like pulling people that could have easily fallen to the background, like Monty, who, you know, he's not loud and in your face. Like, he very easily could just fade into the background, and he doesn't because he's a part of this group. And so knowing that there are other characters like Miller and Harper and all of them that that may not have started off as a main part of this group, but at some point might be called upon, and they kind of join the major group. So yeah, I know what you mean there. And I'd like to see I also agree with you about the death thing. Yes, it's a crazy, scary world, and death is a part of the 100. It always will be. That's how they remind you that this world is not, you know, cookies and sunshine. Like, you're going to have some really terrible things. But, yeah, in Sinclair's case, it just didn't necessarily feel like the best choice for me either. Mm. So
yeah, it felt like a shock. Like, okay, we need to kill someone, and okay, we need to get rid of this guy. Ah, let's kill him, you know. But anyway, it's just super sad, and it's one of those things where I'm sort of left a little bit bummed afterwards, which isn't the feeling that you want. And I'm so sad because Alessandra Giuliani was actually like half the reason I started watching The 100 in the first place, because we were just talking about Battlestar Galactica before we started recording, and he was on that show. And he was actually a very similar type of character, and also very similarly stayed in the background for the first couple of seasons. And then in later seasons, he got like a major role.
Aww.
So that's actually kind of funny, like how they did that. So I was like, yay, The 100 will do the same. Oh, no, never mind. So, and I just loved him. And the other half, obviously, was Henry Ian Cusack, who was in Lost. So I knew those two faces going into it. And now I'm super worried about Kane.
he's your last hope there.
He is my last hope. I'm super sad to see Sinclair go. I would have loved for him to stick around, but luckily we still have a lot of other characters that we care about. Two of those, of course, being Clark and Bellamy, who are the last left standing. Look how that worked out.
Poetic. Oh, wait.
I almost like this was planned somehow. The Bellamy and Clark are the only ones left, and they sort of team up to go and try and save the others. And Emerson sort of makes it very clear that Clark needs to hand herself over in order to save her friends, and Clark is more than willing to do that, which just makes me, it just makes me so sad for Clark, because she is so, like, she takes all of this stuff, like, she embraced this one Hida, like, that responsibility on her, like, yeah, like, basically, where she goes, death follows, and she takes responsibility for basically everything bad that has happened on the show, even things that she can't possibly control. Mm-hmm. You know, like, how much guilt she had about Sinclair dying, even though, like, yeah, she let Emerson live, but there was no way, like, she can't predict the future, you know? She can't take responsibility for what Emerson does, you know?
Yeah. I was, pissed that Emerson's, like, a whole life goal now was to kill Clark and or make her watch
make her
people die.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
it's like she spared his life. She could have killed him and been done with it and never, you know, no more thoughts about Emerson, like, ever. But instead, you know, she's had his life spared. She did the noble thing and it came back to bite her. And it just, you know, that drives me crazy. And I was so pissed that it ended up being Emerson. Like, it makes sense, but at the same time, I'm like, she spared your life. Yes, she killed your people. I understand. But, like, if, you know, you were one of the proponents trying to kill her people, like, I feel like there's no... they have very poor ability to look at each other's, like, stand in each other's shoes. It's like Emerson never tried to see things from her point of view. He didn't want to. He didn't care. Mm-hmm. She was wrong and evil, and that was just never going to change. Whereas if he would have taken a step back and like looked at it and said, I was trying to kill her people, and she saved her people. She just was successful rather than, you know, my people being the one that were saved. So that's my one complaint about this, is that I feel like if they took a step back and tried to see things from a new perspective, there's a lot to gain there. And they, especially the Mountain Men, don't seem to ever be able to do that. Now that they're gone,
yeah,
we have less to worry about.
Yeah, it's true. The last Mountain Man is gone. I know a lot of people sort of really enjoyed him and what he brought to the show, but and yeah, I mean he was great, but I did feel like he sort of tipped into the too obvious villain role for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I understand his motivation, but at the same time, like you said, like, his vendetta against Clark seemed a little TV showy.
Extreme. Which, yeah.
I mean, it is a TV show, but I feel like it's so good at transcending its medium a lot of the time, so this sort of stuck out to me, how convenient it was. Also, I'm sorry, how did he even find that cave? You know, like, how did he...
Yeah.
I don't understand how that made sense. And then he got to the dropship and he had this plan to pick them up one by one. Like, how did he know any of this?
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a reason.
Yeah.
Writers, let us know, because of course you're listening. No.
Definitely.
Definitely. But so, no, anyway, that was just like a small thing. But what I did really love is what this story allowed us to get, which was basically Clark being faced with losing all of her friends at once. Mm-hmm. You know, basically everyone except for Abby that she has left, that she cares about in the whole world, are in that room, and he's about to kill them just because that's what she, or just, but because that's what she did to him. And I also really love, because obviously Bellamy is immediately like, you know, you're not actually going to go there and hand yourself over to die because that's stupid. So let's just kill the guy instead. And that doesn't work. And the only thing that sort of makes Bellamy turn and go into the room and leave Clark on the other side is Octavia, of course. When he threatens Octavia's life, Bellamy's like, hell, you know, no, this, of course he's going to go in there, you know?
Yeah.
And that sort of Blake sibling bond continues to be complicated and beautiful. And
especially because Octavia basically gives him the I could kill you myself glare every time she gets a chance. Like, even in this moment, I don't feel like she was like, you know, Bellamy saved me. It was, you know, if I die, I'm a warrior. Like, you know, like Octavia is not happy. And Bellamy, you know, she's still his little sister. And if he has an opportunity to save her, he's going to it every step of the way now. But
yeah.
Yeah. Oh, the Blakes.
Yeah. Oh, the Blakes. And, you know, I'm not totally, because I know there's been like that thing. I don't know if you saw it on Twitter. It's been retweeted a bunch of times of the gif of Bellamy and Octavia looking at each other as the smoke comes in and as they're about, or as they're being suffocated. And it's sort of this, oh, you know, even at this point, like, they still want each other to be the last thing they see. And, like, I really did enjoy that moment for them. But then later, when Octavia's looking at Bellamy through the flames, when they're standing by the funeral pyre, I'm not sure that things are going to be okay between them. Like, I didn't see forgiveness in her eyes. I saw blame,
you know? Yeah, and that's going to be the thing. Like, every time she's reminded of why Lincoln died, it's going to remind her that her brother played a huge part in that. So every reminder of Lincoln is going to dig the trench just a little deeper between her and Bellamy on her side, because Bellamy is going to be doing his darndest to fill it in and to be there and to prove to her that he let her down once. Twice now. Like, he screwed up and he knows he did, and he has a long way to go to prove that he is the brother she needs and he is there for her. So I think, you know, in those final moments where they both thought they were going to die, like, I basically thought that she kind of found a little bit of peace in that moment because she was going to be with Lincoln. Mm-hmm. And so forgiving Bellamy was, you know, like, you could almost see it in her eyes. Like, she was forgiving him in that moment, but they survived. And then they burned Lincoln's body. And all of that pain came right back. Like, it's not like she got over everything that Bellamy did that brought about Lincoln's death. So now that she's been reminded of it and reminded of her pain and has to, you know, kind of embrace that all over again and start the mourning process, like, it's going to make things more difficult between her and Bellamy until something else can take precedence and she can, you know, properly mourn Lincoln and find a way, or the way, to forgive Bellamy for his part in it.
That's a very good observation. I think you're spot on with that. And how beautiful, like, that whole scene, or beautiful is the wrong word, but how intense and just sort of full circle-y was it for Clark to be held up against the glass and watch as everyone she loves basically dies.
So that freaking airlock and the floating, it's like, it's like she's watching all of her friends get floated at the same time. Like, you can almost feel the flashbacks to her dad and all of that. Like, it's happening right before her eyes. And
we don't say this enough because we're so like, oh, you know, all the side characters, but Eliza Taylor is just astonishing. Mm-hmm. Like, she is beyond anything. Like, she is so good, and everything she brings to that role and the rawness of it and the pain and the desperation and the guilt and the, like, all of that, like, she carries it all. And it's just, and you're just watching her face through all of that, and it's just devastating. I thought it was amazing.
Yeah, she's, you can see the gears working in her head. She's trying to figure some way out of this. Like, she's at this, watching them all die, and she's thinking, like, how? Like, how do I stop this? How can I stop this? And you see her, like, struggling and flailing to find some way. And yeah, she's amazing. I really, really love Eliza Taylor, and she will be one of those actresses, I'm sure, that I will follow for decades, because she's just that good.
She is. Did you think, were you convinced that someone else was going to come save them? Because I was like, who is around in the area? Like, who's left? Who can come? And, like, I was like, is it Kane? Is it
Indra?
Is it Nico? Is it like, who is around? And because I was sure that someone was going to come in and, like, knock him on the back of the head.
Yeah, I was trying to, I didn't know how she was going to get out of this. I really didn't.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking of, like, we know where certain characters are, like Murphy and whatnot, but there are some, like Kane, who we're not exactly sure where they are right now. Mm-hmm. We saw him kind of leave, but we don't know. So I was like, he could have very easily heard them arrive at Arcadia, like he was nearby or something, and came to check it out, but hung back because they were on edge or something, you know? Like, there were so many things going on in my head, like, who is going to step in and save them? And, I totally
thought...
Wouldn't
it be funny if it would have been Pike? He's like, oh my God. Hey, kids.
He just walks in and knocks
the
guy
to save the day.
God. Yeah. That would have, oh my gosh. It would have made complicated matters.
Yeah. But no, I mean, what I do love about this is that I was so sure someone else was going to come in and save them, and no one did, but Clark did. Clark mm-hmm. is perfectly capable of saving everyone herself. And we sort of need to be reminded every once in a while that she is the hero, and she gets shit done, for lack of a better expression, and she uses her intellect more than anything else, because she is the one who, like, she is the one who thinks. I was gonna say, like, obviously they all think, but I loved seeing her, not anyone else, actually pull through and save them all, because Clark needs a win. And it's also just one of those reminders that the kids are alone now. Like, that no one's coming to save them.
Well, and I also loved that we got to see what happens when someone who's not a Nightblood gets this AI. Mm-hmm. Like, they've talked about it before, that it's this awful death and all of that. But, you know, you can only hear about it so much before you just kind of need to know mm-hmm. what it means. And to watch him die, that was really
brutal.
Like, that was an awful way to go. And it makes it all the much clearer that you have to have this Nightblood. Like, there's something about what Becca injected into herself and that's been passed down. Like, there's something about it that allows them to host it. So I was kind of, I felt bad because it seemed like a really terrible way to go, even for Emerson, but I was glad we got to finally see how brutal that death is.
Yeah.
So now we know that not just anyone can try it. Like, yeah. You know,
mm-hmm. I was fine with it. It was a jerk who deserved it. No, I'm kind of kidding, but he was the worst, so I'm glad he's gone.
Yeah.
So everyone is safe. Clark saves the day, and they all make it through. Do you watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Yes.
I just started season two, and Fitz is recovering from having been deprived of oxygen, right? So I was watching that scene like, oh no, are they all going to be brain damaged? Like, what's going to happen? Because I had that in my back of my mind. I'm like, they're all going to have, like, what is it called? I don't remember, but like, they're all going to have, like, this after effect of having been deprived of oxygen. But luckily, they were fine, I assume.
There's no deficits here. They're all okay.
They're all okay. That's beautiful, by the way, in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Like, what they're doing with Fitz, I'm so in awe of it. Anyway, that's not what this is about. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. special will be coming up, I'm sure. But, so they all make it, and we sort of get, like, one final surprise of the episode, which is that they split up, and, no, that's not it, that they bring out Lincoln's body, which was, I think, a shock. Like, I didn't expect to see him. I was, like, a little bit sort of breathless. I was like, oh, no, you know, Lincoln. And Octavia has her breakdown, which was beautiful. And they give the two of them a proper burial, and all stand around sort of having sort of a quiet moment of reflection, which really is not something we get very often on the show. So I liked it a lot.
It was really well done. It kind of, you know, as much as Octavia, you know, she needs to finish what they've started here before she can fully mourn him, but knowing that his body has been treated with the respect it deserves and that he is now, you know, his burial is complete for her, like, that has to be somewhat comforting.
Mm-hmm.
Like, knowing that it's not just going to fall into the wrong hands and she's not going to make it back to take care of him, and, you know, that has to be somewhat relieving, is that he is now in the past, and she needs to, you know, mourn him and move on, but at least the respect has been given that she would have wanted for him too.
Yeah. So kind of like in season two when Clark needed to bury Finn, you know?
Yeah. Well, and, you know, when she watched Lincoln die, she was leaving. And so, you know, who knows what Pike and his people would do. You know, who knows what the Sky Crew ritual is on Earth? Nobody knows.
Mm-hmm.
So I could see that being like a piece of, you know, not something she actively worries about, but just, you know, it's unsettling. So knowing that he's been taken care of, that, you know, it has to help a little. So
I hope so.
Yeah, it was a really, again, a really beautiful moment for her to kind of have this before they march off to find Luna. Like, she has this moment to kind of grieve and let a little bit of her pain go. Like, it was really beautiful.
Yeah. And of course, that does lead into our gang splitting up again, which I'm upset that they're splitting up, but I actually, like, as I said at the start, like, they're still on the same path. Like, Raven... So basically, the groups are Bellamy, Clark, Octavia, and Jasper are going to head out to find Luna. Monty, Raven, Miller, Brian, and Harper stay behind in Arcadia to figure out how to do the AI thing. So they're still on the same mission. They're just doing different things. And I don't know about you, but I really like the constellations that they've set up now.
I do too. Because the only major character that's back at Arcadia is Raven.
Yep.
Like, Monty is a major character, but he hasn't been as fully fleshed out as the rest of them.
Mm-hmm.
So having Monty, Raven, Miller, Brian, and Harper all together, I feel like we're going to get some moments between not just Raven and Monty, but Miller and Monty and and Raven. And, you know, like, you'll have some time for these characters that have been tertiary, they have been secondary, to truly step up. Because you've got Bellamy and Octavia and Jasper and Clark all together, so anytime you're with them, you'll be seeing them, you know.
Mm.
So, yeah, I'm really excited about how they split them this time.
I am too, like, exactly for the reasons you said, because now we have this group, and we hope that they're going to give us lots of scenes in Arcadia, and maybe this is part of the reason why they had that scene at the beginning with Brian, Harper, and Miller, because, of course, like, Miller is like, I'll take care, like, me and Brian will take care of them, and Harper's like, and I'll take care of these guys, like, continuing the OT3 love, you know? Like, it's really nice. It's really cool. I'm very, very stoked for all of these, and obviously you guys all know that, yeah, Minty, blah, 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 I like it, whatever, don't hate me for it. But we also have, you know, Harper and Monty in the same place, which is a ship that, like, I could get behind. Monty and Raven, that could happen. I'd be okay with that. You know, basically Monty with any of these people, I would be okay with.
Well, I mean, let's just say Monty and Raven would be a really interesting pairing. Mm-hmm. Not that they need to be paired off.
No, of course, yeah.
With his know-how, technological, and her, like, engineering prowess, like... For them to work together and get closer, like, I feel like it would be amazing. Plus, she is, like, the dominant personality in that pairing.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, to see her kind of shine and truly have someone who's, like, with her, like, I am totally on board for Raven and Monty, whatever that ship name would be. But I'm totally on board to see that.
I hope it's Ronty.
I mean,
well, it has to be a thing now because we just came up with the name. No, I mean, I agree. And last week people were saying, oh, maybe Raven and Jasper would be interesting. And I agree. I could see that. And just to be clear, like, it's not all about the romance. Like, obviously these kids can have relations without having relationships, you know, like, they don't have to. We don't have to, like, pair everyone up, and I think actually it's really nice that not everyone is paired up. But let's be clear, Monty is, like, the only person who has never had a love interest on the show, so let's just get him in the club, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Like, he needs someone, especially in this dark time.
Mm, yeah, and with everything with his mom and stuff, like...
Yeah, like, with what he's going through, and him and Jasper are not happy, so, like, he needs somebody, and I think Raven would be a really interesting...
Somebody, like, to love...
Yeah,
sorry.
Interesting bestie / you know, girl bestie.
Absolutely.
Or romance. Whichever.
Or something more. Yeah. If it can't be Miller, god damn it, show. I ask for one thing, you know.
And you can. I mean, Brian is really interesting.
Well, yeah, I guess.
I'd like him to, eventually be fully fleshed out.
He's not that interesting yet, though. And I do find, like, they just kind of introduced him and they're like, oh, they're boyfriends. Like, they love each other. And we really have yet to, not that we need proof, but I'm just saying, you know, Monty was right there. And I'm over it. Oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm still talking about this. It's so embarrassing. But we're very excited. And also the other group, of course, Bellamy Clark back on the same mission. I know a lot of people are happy about that. You're happy about that. Yes?
I'm very happy about that. Mm-hmm. I mean... He really needs absolution for some of the things he's done. And I think the only person who can give it to him is Clark.
That's true.
Octavia's forgiveness is going to be on its own. That's a whole nother ballgame. But for the grand scheme of things, for the things he let Pike do and stood aside and let happen, I think Clark is the only person whose opinion truly matters to him. Mm-hmm. So I'm interested to see them in the same place for an extended period of time, like in this, you know, they have to share this journey. So hopefully they'll really get to talk about how he let her down and how she let him down. And yeah, they just have a lot to talk about.
Of course, now we say that, Kristen, watch in the next episode how, like, they find something and Clark is like, yeah, I'm going to go check this out. See you in a couple of weeks. You
know? And I start yelling.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're right. This is going to be great. I mean, I've said a lot that Bellamy and Clark's dynamic has sort of been at the center of this show since the beginning. And after this long of them being separated, having them have to work together with everything that's still between them, because, you know, not everything was resolved in last week's episode. So there's still a lot of tension between them. But they're on a mission now. Octavia's with them on this mission. Jasper, there's still a lot of tension between Jasper and Clark that's in no way resolved.
And I love that Jasper doesn't seem to blame Bellamy for that at all. Like, he has his own issues with Bellamy. Mm-hmm. But, like, as far... Bellamy, you know, tried to take as much of the blame for what happened at Mount Weather as Clark did. That's mm-hmm. why he did it with her. And yet Jasper seems to blame Clark.
Yeah.
And so I think there's got to be a conversation between Jasper and Bellamy coming up that Bellamy kind of lays into him and says, it wasn't just her. Like, you know, if you're going to hate her, you have to hate me too. Like, you know, I can see something like that maybe coming down the pike, and I'd love to
down
see
the
Bellamy
pike.
Go. Oh, boy. No, but I'd love to see Bellamy and Jasper, like, have a moment and, like, really go at each other over some stuff that's been left hanging for a while.
Yeah, me too. There's so much to be said, and I have a feeling too that it would be very interesting to see Octavia and Jasper sort of unite against Clark and Bellamy. Not really, but, you know, like, they're sort of the obvious team ups here. I don't know, it's gonna be so interesting. I really hope that we get this now until the end of the season. But
I hope
probably
so
won't. So,
yeah, this is the 100th.
Yeah, it's absolutely yes, absolutely true. So I just realized that we're like an hour in and we still haven't talked about all the stuff that happened at Polis, and I feel bad. But there isn't. I mean, honestly, there's not that much to say other than Imori, you know, snuck back into town and it all seemed so amazing, and she was all smiling and Murphy was all happy and it was like the cutest thing in the world, and then boom. She's Allie. And it was just dumb and pointless. And I'm very mad about that. And Jaha. I don't know. How do you feel about Jaha now?
He's such a punk. Like, he steps into the room and completely screws Murphy over. Like, what a jerk.
No,
like,
I mean, he did save his life, right? He was like, no, you need him alive.
I know, but, like, he caused Murphy's life to be in danger and then saved him. Like, can you really be like, I'm so pissed at Jaha.
Yeah.
I know he's just as much, basically, just as much a slave to this whole Allie thing as everybody else, because he took the chip first. He didn't know what it was, and he's now a part of it. So, of course, his brain is just as affected as everybody else. But he being her, like, number one is so easy to blame.
Yeah.
Because he's making, you know, he's manipulating and forcing people to take this chip, like Abby. I will never forgive him for that. And, you know, like, there's just some things, man. And turning on Murphy here, like, you know, really sticking it to him here, it just, it hurt. I don't like Murphy. I've never liked Murphy.
You still don't like Murphy?
Well, I mean, I like Murphy, but, you know, pain in the ass for so long that watching Jaha just walk in and ruin everything he's been trying to set up and do, like, I felt so bad for Murphy. And Antari and blah.
You felt bad for her? No, I'm guessing not.
For her. I'm so fed up with her.
Like, yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, to be honest with you, and, like, I said this in my review, like, at this point, when Jia came into the throne room, I was like, F yeah, Jia, you know, because he's like Antari, like, compared to Antari, he is the lesser of two evils. And, like, I just wanted to see him take her down. Like, I don't even care. Like, obviously the whole alley thing is a problem, but Antari, it was just so evil that I prefer Ja. And I also, I feel like, and I've said this before, like, Ja has just warmed to me so much. Like, at this point, I just want him to stick around and be crazy because I think he's so entertaining. Like, I don't, there's just something about him that's so compelling.
He is definitely entertaining. That is for sure. I think, you know, we're not supposed to be on Team Jaha right now, so it's totally fine. But yeah, he is definitely a character.
He adds something that's very, very compelling to watch. Like, and he makes sense to me. Like, I don't know. He just, everything, like, all of his crazy, like, fanaticism. Also because it's reminiscent of a certain character in BSG, which I keep coming back to, but the two shows are so much alike. And like, there is a character that I really enjoy in that show who sort of becomes consumed with this religious calling, which is very, very hard to understand. But it also, like, still, they're still very sympathetic characters. So I don't know. I hope he sticks around. Well, I really hope he sticks around. I really enjoy him on the screen.
Yeah, and this does set up the Allie versus Allie 2 thing that, you know, has been long coming since we first learned that what this chip thing was Allie 2. Like, now Allie literally is queen king of the grounders. Mm-hmm. Like, she's in charge over there. So now you've got the delinquents versus Allie, basically. Mm-hmm. And so it's Allie 2 versus Allie. So now we're there. So now it's just a matter of getting Allie 2 to Luna in time to have, you know, someone using this AI against the other. So it's set up well. Like, I understand why everything has happened. It's just, I might not still be the biggest fan.
Oh, no. Yeah. Well, and it's hard to judge too, because he's like, he's a puppet at this point, you know, but yeah. And so Antari, and someone was asking, like, in the recap, like, was she so quick to take the chip? But I think that's sort of implied in the narrative. Like, she has promised the power of the commander that she can't have because she doesn't have the real chip. So obviously she's going to take this chip because she wants the power, you know, but it just ends up with her being another pawn.
Yeah, like, she thinks it's her way to power, but it's actually her way to giving the power to Allie and Jaha.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I do not feel sorry for her, so that's fine.
No, not at all.
No. And so, yeah, but that's where we leave everyone this episode, and I liked it a lot. I loved last week's more, just because it was so good, the delinquents coming together, and I'm also still very annoyed at Sinclair dying, but I liked it. I think the show is in a really good stretch right now.
Mm-hmm. I agree. You know, the things that have happened so far that have got us here were rough and were really hard to digest, but the story is definitely there. Like, it's not just, things didn't just happen to happen. Like, it's pushed the story forward. And so, yeah, now I'm really, really, really anxious to get more. Like, is it Thursday yet?
I know. I'm excited again. Like, really excited. And I love that feeling. It's very, very good.
Yeah.
So we've had, like, some people, like, we've talked to you guys on Twitter a little bit, and we've gone back and forth. And we have a couple of emails that we want to read out, and they're a little long. So the first email we have is from Becca Klaus, who had a long email for us, and they're both very long, so we've cut them down a little bit, but we want to keep in most of it because all of it is so good and we think you guys have such excellent points. So I'm gonna make Kristen read the one from Becca.
Sure. Becca says, "Hey, hype friends. Had to take a minute and write in about all of my 100 feels. I have listened to the podcast since before the relaunch and love you guys. I'm a newer 100 convert and had put off jumping on this train for a long time. You guys talked and talked about this show, and I was always like, yeah, but is it really that good? Then a couple of guys at work brought up how awesome it was, and then my brother mentioned it, and I had to check it out. That's history, and I'm obsessed." I even got my mom into it. Yes, my mom watches The 100. All the love and gushing has a point, and let's get to it. Okay, the good since the last special. Bellamy is broken, and he has to live with it. every character on the show has been through the ringer and has been forced to make unimaginable and even horrid choices. The one constant has been, there might not be any good guys. It's always to save themselves, those they love, or their people, and always for the greater good. From the beginning, Bellamy joining Pike has felt different. I'm so happy that the redemption of my favorite character hasn't been an overnight thing. The scenes between Bellamy and O have been some of my faves this season. Totally agree.
Mm-hmm.
Now we'll step into the City of Light. I miss Lexa, and this will be controversial, but what her death kick-started might be the coolest thing I've seen on TV in a long time. I was apprehensive about the City of Light thing in the beginning, but I'm all in. As someone who binged season 1 and 2, it was so cool when Lincoln's mention of the Mountain Men led to Mount Weather, and then to the Reapers, and then, oh my god, Lincoln is a Reaper, and we have to save him. I get that same thrill from what we've gotten since the AI came out of Lexa. The background characters are everything. I can legit say I love Harper, Monty, Sinclair, and the rest. Even though they are not the core players, they add so much heart and so many layers. Wholeheartedly agree with Selena's article when she said, give me more Harper, Miller, and Brian telling ghost stories around the fire. Also didn't know how much I liked Imori and hated and loved to hate Emerson until they came back. And super sad to see Sinclair go. His pleading with Raven to stay in the rover actually brought tears to my eyes.
Oh, yeah.
And our last little bit, allegories, symbolism, and drama, oh my. This show, like none I have come across, makes its viewers have a powerful and emotional response to what is put on screen, and makes people think and talk about things that they usually never brought to light. After episode 10, Fallen, viewers were talking about free will, rape, addiction, depression, suicide, coming back from a failed suicide attempt, and the show needing trigger warnings. Deep stuff, especially when there is nothing wrong with just seeing it as Allie is a creepy AI who can take over people, and Murphy was just being Murphy. It's incredible the dialogues this show has started. Can't wait for the special. Hugs, Becca.
Ah, such good points. Yeah. I mean, so much to say, and obviously we won't because we already said a lot, and this is for the listeners. But no, I just on that last point, I agree. And I know, you know, I wrote this article about free will and rape culture and how the Hundred sort of facilitated those discussions by putting Murphy in that situation with Antari. And not spelling it out, because one thing is when shows sort of make a PSA, like what were they called, like the after school specials that they used to do.
Yeah.
Buffy does a few of those too. Like they did just the one, the Beauty and the Beast we just talked about. You weren't on, but the rewatchable, we just talked about that one, like how that was like all about domestic violence, and we're like, oh, that's a bad thing. Like the Hundred doesn't do it like that. The Hundred like puts characters in morally ambiguous or terrible situations. They're like, okay, now listeners, you or viewers, you go. Like, you talk about it. You figure it out for yourselves. And I love that. I personally love that. And I think the kind of discussions that came out of that thing with Murphy makes TV worth it. And it almost doesn't matter if they meant for those discussions or not. Like, I know it matters. But in this case, I feel like the fact that the discussions happen is, like, a big reason why TV, and especially sci-fi and fantasy, exists. It's to allow us to talk about things that we can't talk about as openly, you know?
Yeah, and they've done a good job of, in those situations, their characters make a choice, but they don't necessarily paint that choice as the right choice.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, it's not always that these characters are going to do everything right. Like, they make a choice, and then the show lets us decide whether we think it was the right choice or the wrong choice. And yes, there are consequences to any choice. So again, you know, like they have to deal with the after effects of whatever they choose to do. And they do a very good job of not, you know, painting this as, you know, Clark the righteous makes all of the right choices, mm-hmm. while Bellamy, you know, the evil one, makes all of the terrible. Like, no, they're all flawed. They all have things that they hold dear and want to keep safe. And they do make terrible choices sometimes in the name of trying to keep their loved ones safe. And yeah, it's facilitated a lot of discussion that you don't necessarily get from other shows, that The Hundred does a very, very good job of framing it so that you can have the discussion, so that you can talk about some things that are not easy to talk about, but because you have a fictional world to kind of set the conversation in, it makes it so much easier to discuss it and to learn you know, what other people think and how they're seeing this situation and all of that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's really, really amazing.
Yeah, it's so good. Like, I agree. I totally agree. And I know there's some mixed opinions on this, but I would come on that side as well. So our second email is from Fernanda Torres, and another long one, but I just... This is like a really cool one because it's basically one long defense of Ja, which just does not happen a lot. So, I'm so happy. There's like a Ja fan out there, and it's Fernanda, and she's gonna fight for him, and I love that. So, let's just get into it here. She says, "Hi guys, I know I'm super late to all the happenings, but I had to catch up on all the 100 episodes before I could add my opinions to the conversation. Now that I'm finally updated on the show and on the Hypes 100 specials, which were great as always, thank you, I can defend my very unpopular opinion. While everyone else is crying over Lex's ridiculous death, and I include myself in the mourners team, I'm trying to overcome grief by changing focus and expressing how much I love Jaha. I really don't understand why you all hate him so much. Maybe it has something to do with the fact that I'm a little older, and sometimes, especially on the first..." She's 32! You're not that much older.
You're not.
You're fine. Yeah. Especially on the first season, the show gets too teenager for me. In that sense, Jaha, Abby, and Kane offer me some relief, but I think he is actually the one moving the mythology forward. So her points are: the whole ghost baby plot is still for me one of the most intriguing, well-written, and character-defining moments of the show. I think it was done with perfection and was one of the first things, along with the white room, that made me think this show was something special, something more than the Battle of the Week thing they had going on. I loved, loved, loved that Jaha and Murphy mission to the City of Light. Their interaction was so great, funny and smart, and made me unhate Murphy. The slow-building craziness of Jaha was so fun to watch and yet made perfect sense after all he had been through. Also, kind of a relief to watch them expanding the limits of the known territory while it seemed everyone else was burying deeper and deeper into claustrophobic Mount Weather. I had a residual dislike for him from Dr. Burke from Grey's Anatomy, but I consider him redeemed from his past after Jaha. The craziness carries on, and he is for sure becoming increasingly dangerous, but it is always contrasted with his growing zen and prophet-like qualities, which are deliciously annoying to watch. I'm very much looking forward to the second half of the season to know more about the AI's intentions and possible interactions, and to see Jaha's place in the mess he is setting up. Don't get me wrong, I for sure would hate the guy in person, but I love him so much as a character. Give Jaha a chance, people. Let's all mourn our loss together and power through this gloomy Lexilus the 100 by remembering we still got a bunch of great characters to cherish. Plus, it's the 100. We really never know where things are going. Love the podcast. Love the specials. Love the website. Keep up the great work, guys. Much love, Fernanda Torres. Much love to you.
Yes.
And you convinced us. We both love Jaha now, right?
I mean, yeah, I do love this like prophet like mm-hmm. quality that he has. It's so crazy. And he's so, you know, it's again, as she said, it's deliciously annoying mm-hmm. because you know that he is like kind of brainwashed here. Like,
yeah.
You know, he's just as affected as everybody else, but because he was the first, we kind of lump him in with Ellie and kind of blame him for what's happening. So, you know, I am very interested to see how this whole City of Light thing goes for the rest of the season and where it goes into season four. Like, you know, how does it play a part? Where are we going from here? Yeah, there's a lot to go, and I'm sure a lot more of Jaha.
He just has this insanely intense hero complex. Like, that's what he has. He wants to be the savior. Like, he tried sacrificing himself for his people twice in season one, and that didn't work. And now he's like, okay, well, I am gonna save everyone. Damn it! Like, stamping his feet, like, I am the one who will save you. And and then he got twisted up in this whole AI thing, and how much of it is really him, and how much is manipulated? What's gonna happen to him when and if he snaps out of it? Like, you know, I do think that's very fascinating and cool to watch.
Yeah, and the whole baby thing, mm-hmm. like. he couldn't just save himself. He would have died on mm-hmm. the Ark.
Yeah.
But or on what was left of the Ark. But, you know, he needed this reason to go to Earth. He needed something.
He needed to be special, you know?
Yeah, he has this need to be the hero, to be the one that everyone counts on to sacrifice himself to save everyone else. So, yeah, he is a very, very different and crazy character, mm-hmm. but that's why we love him.
Yeah, it is. It is. I mean, again, yeah. And looking at his arc through the show so far, it has been extremely, extremely intense and extremely, like, when you really examine it, it makes so much sense. Like, he's insane, but it makes sense what he does. Like, even when he was in that, he was trapped with Kane when we first met Lexa. And they were like, one of you has to kill the other. And Yaha was like, yeah, well, I'll kill Kane because I'm the chosen one, you know? And that was like made total sense to him because he killed off all those people in the desert because they weren't him. And he was the most important one because he had a destiny. And that has driven him. And maybe finding out that he was a pawn all along, maybe that's going to lead him to an interesting play, or he's just going to die. Like, we'll have to wait and see. But either way, I am really, really liking what he brings to the show. And I have been all of the season. I think it's been really cool. So thank you so much. And thanks to, we had a small other email from Rebecca M, who said, I hadn't heard of The 100 before you guys mentioned it. One day surfing through Netflix, I see they have the first couple of seasons and remembered you guys raved about it. So I checked it out. All I can say is I am hooked. And now she's watching it with her boyfriend. So she's not all caught up. So she probably won't be listening to this for a while, but I wanted to bring that in. Yes, we did. We did see your email when you listened to this in like 2020 or whatever. But no, thank you guys for those wonderful, insightful emails. We are planning to do another one of these. I guess maybe we'll, depending on like what happens in the episodes and how you know, passionate we are about talking about it, we might do one more before the finale, or we'll do another one because there's 16 or 18 episodes this season. Wait, I'll look that up.
I was gonna say, not sure.
There's 100 episodes. 16 episodes.
Yay! Okay.
So
we've got four more.
We've got four more. And I'm guessing there's a lot more, like, huge stuff because we're nearing the season finale now. So there's going to be, like, death and destruction all around. If Harper dies, I quit, guys. I'm telling you right now. That's a lie, but I'm going to be very pissed off. I'm going to send an angry letter. I promise you that.
Like, mm-hmm. who would be my linchpin? I think if they killed Bellamy, I would have some real tough time.
Yeah.
I don't think he's the one. But I mean, he would be I just love how crazy his story has been, like, from start to finish. I hated him in first season, hated him. And now, like, he's kind of the reason he's one of my favorite parts of the show. And I don't know if they killed him. It might be hard.
Oh, interesting.
I don't think I could ever just stop, but, you know.
No, I think the only one they could kill that would make me reconsider watching would be Clark. Like, if they actually went there and, like, where they were like, we're so radical, we kill our lead, I might be like, okay, yeah, I know. Like, that's not a cool thing to do. I might still watch, but I would be angry about it. But for that, like, I think that's one of the reasons I get so attached to the side characters is because really, like, for me, it's about the world and it's not about the main characters. It is about them, but it's just as much about believing in the reality of it. So that's why I feel more strongly maybe about characters like Harper and Sinclair and Monty and all of those people, you know? So I would be very pissed off if they kill Monty. Like, I'm going to be pissed. But of course, and then you go into saying, like, if they killed, like, Octavia or Raven or Bellamy or, like, I can't even imagine they would do that, you know?
Yeah.
No.
Like, I really can't. No. There are just some characters that you just cannot imagine the show without. Mm-hmm. And Octavia and Bellamy and Jasper and Monty and Clark, they all, Raven, they all are there.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, what would this show be but missing its Raven? Like, I don't know.
I know.
I don't want to ever have to know.
Flightless.
Ever.
Yes. No, I and that's ultimately the thing for me, is that I don't have like that one character that I'm, that I would, it's like, that's my breaking point. But I think it just in terms of the more characters die, the less, the slightly less I feel about it all. And I think the 100's strength, its biggest strength is for sure its characters. So the more you lose those pillars, like the more unstable the house becomes, you know, like the more you take away, like the poorer the show feels. So if they killed Octavia, say, like, I wouldn't riot in the streets, but I would be like, okay, well, that's one less reason to get excited for the show. So
absolutely.
On that wonderful uplifting note, we love the 100, and we are very, very excited with where the show is going. And as we said, we'll maybe do one more special before the finale, definitely one after the finale, and let you guys know what we thought about it. So please do, the preferred way of sending us feedback is email, because then we can sort of star them and save them and they don't get lost in our feeds. So do leave us your thoughts via email. That's hype@hypeable.com. It's hype@hypeable.com. You can also write us messages on hype, on this post on hypeable.com, and you can tweet us just if you want to let us know what you thought of this podcast, or if you have any other notes you want to spring up on next week's episode of Hype, you can do that at hypeablehype on Twitter. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope to see you guys back for the normal Hype podcast, but otherwise just stay tuned for the next special. We'll let you know on the usual outlets. And enjoy the next episode of The 100. My name is Selena.
Yes. And I'm Kristen.
Bye.
Bye.
We're going to have a cool sign off for this one.
Yeah.
Like, sing the theme song.